With the state of today's economy, it is more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made of the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back into your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
Down to business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland
on News Talk.
Now, I'm delighted to be joined by our esteemed panel here in studio in the form of Susan Hayes Cullen, also known as the Positive Economist and a presenter taking stock here at the station. Also joining us is Bob Hoffman, a regular contributor to the show. He's the owner of Vista Executive Search. And finally joining us is Conor Falkland, a veteran here also at the station, a motoring commentator and advisor to the Royal Irish Automobile Club. So, our esteemed panelists are here. Let's talk about the stories of the year. Conor, I want to start with you. Infrastructure. And I know it's only one word, but by God, does it cover a lot.
My God, it does. And infrastructure or lack thereof. We've had a lot of stories about this during the year. Most recently, a month or so ago, there was a story to say that the M50 was full. TII literally said that it was maxed out. And not only that it was maxed out, but they had no plans to do anything to improve it or develop it. It's as built as it's ever going to get. But it's just one indication of how it's been discussed often, but our lack of pace in building things is no longer cute and no longer funny. It is absolutely killing us. I was looking at one of the stats in Dublin. If we manage to open the Finglas Lewis extension by 2031, which, you know, they're saying that that's not achieved yet, but, you know, they said they were going to do it in 2020. They're hoping to get it open in 2031. If they succeed in doing that, it will mean that Dublin's Lewis will have been extended by 4 kilometres in 17 years.
Wow.
And during that period of time, the population of the city has grown by 20%. So it's well beyond a joke now, our physical incapacity when it comes to providing infrastructure.
Let me bring you back to the M50 and saying that it's at capacity. And there was talk many years ago about an outer orbital somewhere out by Naas or Newbridge or out that way that would basically be an outer ring of the M50. I've heard nothing about that in recent times. Also, somebody said to me, could you not build another layer of the M50 on top of the existing structure? Yeah. Can you imagine that?
Yeah.
Or the pain of going through that when it was built. But, you know, if you stand back from it, the space is there. It does seem logical.
Yeah, well, that may not be their solution, but they're going to have to be some. I mean, that further out route, which would connect the M1 around, you know, west of the M50 all the way around to the M11, that's been mooted a few times. It's one of the ones that was killed off when, you know, the previous government brought in this rule, which they made a silly religion of, which was a 2-to-1 spending ratio, which was to say that for every euro spent on roads, at least 2 euro had to be spent on quote-unquote sustainable modes of transport. Now, what that means is a perverse incentive to put in an over-engineered, ridiculously expensive bike lane just so you can adhere to the ratio.
Yeah.
And it just made for some silly policy decisions. The other one that goes back nearly 30 years as an idea, but the plans are still there, is the eastern bypass of the city, which is essentially, I mean, what we have now is the Port Tunnel. That was originally the northern leg of an eastern bypass. It was envisaged that the tunnel would essentially continue and come up somewhere, you know, south of Fox Rock or Leopardstown and join the M11. We may yet have to do that. Now, that is about building roads, and there's people going to shout in and say, we can't build roads, they just fill up. And I guess that's true. The big one we have to do is to provide public transport. And in Dublin, I mean, listen, if we've 5 hours to spare, we could discuss Metro. and what is holding that bloody
place. Okay, let's get into Metro, and I'm conscious we've loads to talk about, because we can't, if we're talking about infrastructure, we can't ignore Metro. It's going on for decades.
Well, 25 years ago, we said we were going to do it, and then we said we wouldn't because $3 billion was too much. Now we're going to do it for $12 billion. And if that's delayed, if some, you know, perverse Dublin citizens manage to hold it up for a couple of years, it'll go up by a couple of billion again. If we do what we're proposing to do, which is essentially do bus connects instead, which is a short-term, expensive abomination and a major strategic mistake for the city. If we do that, we'll come back in 10 years deciding that $25 billion is too much and we still won't build it. You know, if we'd done it when we said we would have it in the city now, and we are going to need to do it at some stage. Whenever we delay, all we do is increase the cost.
Well, the other thing is, you know, if we look at the Dartmouth Square end and, you know, if you lived on Dartmouth Square, maybe you'd have a different view. But, you know, there's nothing to stop the project starting at the other end when this gets sorted out. Yeah. As in, why does everything have to stop when the dispute is only in one piece of the infrastructure?
Yeah. And there we get deeply into the weeds of the abuse of the judicial review process, because in theory, a judicial review process can apply a big stop to the entire project. And as I say, if you think about Metro, roughly speaking, every time you delay for a year, you cost €1 billion.
Yeah.
Just in the cost of building the thing, to say nothing of the opportunity cost of not having it in the city and the congestion we suffer. So if we have 5.5 million people in the country, and our attitude is we're going to build something, does anybody object? Hands up, class, anybody? One hand goes up at the back of the room. And everything stops. And as I say, while if you're talking about the rights of man and property rights, and you wouldn't like it if it was your house, you know, you can make a case for that. But the damage that it is doing to the country is as I say, it ceased being cute a long time ago. We actually dodged a bullet because COVID and working from home, those two phenomena together, took the temperature out of traffic for about 5 or 6 years. But we're now well above pre-COVID levels, and you know, here we are again where we knew we were 10 years ago, and it breaks my heart to see the solutions being proposed, including things like bus connects and buslet. You just put your head in your hands
and say,
that is a 10-year cock-up, and when you're finished with it, we'll still need to build a metro, but now it'll be another $10 billion more expensive again.
Let's get the thoughts of Bob Hoffman on the same subject of infrastructure, Bob. Connor very eloquently there described two projects, both of which are capital horror stories, neither of which are complete. What are your own thoughts on how we spend the citizens' money?
Well, let's not forget what caused this problem. It is the government who have put layer after layer of red tape over everything, to the point now you need 8 to 10 regulators to approve the building of a garden shed in the city. It really has got this bad. So my example is not as sexy as the M50. The $1.3 billion Dublin drainage project is finally about to proceed as a settlement has been reached. And it was originally thought that they were going to get planning permission in 2018. It's now going to start in 2025, in the next few weeks, and it won't be finished until 2029. So finally, the government have reached a point where they're just going to put a line in the sand and get rid of most of the red tape, one would hope.
Sitting quietly observing this horror show unfold is Susan is Susan Hayes Cullerton. Susan, you heard Connor and Bob there. Nothing good to say about our ability to build capital infrastructure.
Well, you can spot the two dubs here anyway, can't you? Because all the focus has been on Dublin City so far. And while I live here, Bobby, as any listener will know, I didn't grow up here. And so, okay, I have a couple of things to say on this. First of all, I don't think it's all bad. And if we look at the Future 50 report that was out, one of the big reports that was out this year, in 1985, the population was a third lower. Life expectancy was 10 years less. We earned 60% lower real earnings back then. 22% of people went to college versus 60% today. And we had 10 kilometres of motorway versus 1,000 kilometres today.
Yeah.
So I think, first of all, it's important to recognise we have come a long way. Admittedly, that was 40 years ago. But I think it's not all bad. And I do want to point out that there was, and by the way, I certainly am not saying that it's all good, far from it. There's nothing I would disagree with either of the two gentlemen who've spoken before me. But what I do want to pick up on, and I think we should really hold this into consideration and account in 2026, and that is, there was a report issued in the first week of December It was called Accelerating Infrastructure. And just like you said, Bob, the government identified indeed that in terms of judicial reviews, there was a 43% increase of them between 23 and 24 and 30% increase in 25. And so, indeed, as Bob said, they are talking now about legal reform and regulatory reform. And I think that is going to be really, really important. And I think we should absolutely, Bobby, you and I sit here in this seat very often and hold the government to account on that. But the second thing, too, is the sheer increase in our population. Like the plans for what you were saying, Connor, you know, looking at this a year ago or 2 years ago or 10 years ago, the population is growing faster than anyone anticipated, which simply compounds the issue. And that's not letting anybody off the hook. It's simply an observation to bear in mind. Like, they're committing in this report to 110 billion of new public capital up to 2035. They're planning for 22,300 new school places to be available in 26 and 27. Now, that's badly needed. And also, Ishke Éireann have said it now takes 7 to 10 years for a small wastewater treatment plan to happen. Major road projects now can take up to 15 years. And the development timelines have doubled in the past 20 years. So, I think that we have, the plan has been identified now, all of the issues that we've heard already, they've all been put on the table, hopefully 2026.
Let me bring you back to that plan, because as I understand it, it was a plan largely written by people who don't work in the public sector. They were people who have...
the task force.
Who have private expertise.
Yes.
The second thing was that there was identified must-do things and there was timelines put on each point and allocated responsibility. Now, you don't normally get that in reports. So that means that theoretically, at least, there should be nowhere to hide when it comes to reviewing where are we now versus this report when we're talking this time next year.
Well, when you look at the individuals involved, and I don't know them all, so I won't call out all of their names in case I get any wrong, all right, but I do think they come from a perspective of, as you say, not just outside the public sector, but from decades collectively of watching and being influential in making Ireland grow, which of course has led to the challenges that we now have and unintended consequences of our economic success. But like, I would also like to think, to put a positive spin on this, is that if there was ever a time we could get this right, Bobby, it's now.
Yeah. You know, is there, maybe it's cold comfort, but a lot of the problems that we're having, and maybe it's not around the management of the projects, but those, I suppose, capacity problems are right across the world, right across Europe. We just have different versions of problems that others have.
Well, we do, but also going back to the regional point, I mean, the population growth in Meath and Longford is far greater than what's happening in Dublin. And so I think when we solely look at this in terms of individual places, there is a challenge there. And of course, we haven't even gotten to housing yet. We've talked about infrastructure. And now, in fairness, Bob also picked up on the point that housing can't happen without water and sewage. And then we have the AI boom that's happening along the way. But no doubt about it, if you're in the UK or you're in Australia or you're in the US, or particularly if you're in Africa, there are very similar challenges. The difference is we have the corporation tax and the revenue beside it to actually deliver it.
Yeah, and housing seems to be one that crosses all of those jurisdictions. A very similar story is being told about housing in Australia, New Zealand, as well as Ireland. You're dead right to make the point, Susan, that these are a consequence of success. They're high quality problems to have. So, you know, we should embrace that. We should be delighted with it. Sorry for being Dublin centric, but the M50 really isn't a Dublin road. I mean, I looked at the data on this. It literally carries 50% of Ireland's freight. 50% of Ireland's freight.
So there's not a D4 actually, perspective actually, here, Susan. Actually, you're wrong. You're wrongly called out a D4 bias on this panel.
Like, it's only 40 kilometres long, the M50. It's only 40 kilometres long. And literally half of all the island's freight moves on it. So we're astonishingly vulnerable to it. A bit like the airport. I mean, it's called Dublin Airport, but I mean, it's a national resource. It's a national resort. But mind you, there's probably people shouting at the radio in Galway, because if we think we have problems in Dublin,
Galway's worse.
I was there yesterday, or I was there earlier in the week.
Yeah.
I went to college in Galway, and I remember when I used to go home between Cork and Galway, that used to be 4 hours, Connor. Now it's 2.5. But definitely, and I went to college in Galway before the motor way was happening in between Dublin and Galway as well at the time. So, and this is the sad thing about it, is that if we go back 20 years ago, I know the Celtic Tiger, etc. was happening, but things were happening faster.
Yeah.
And really, really big things. Like during the 4 years that I was in college, there was a massive change. And this is particularly identified in that accelerating infrastructure report is everything has slowed down now. So I just think, imagine if we could get this right.
Bobby, can I just remind the listeners what our politicians' primary function is? Because everybody seems to forget it. Their number one function is to create laws and amend laws. And all these problems are underpinned by the laws of our land. It takes decades for them to change the legislation.
Well, also, you know, legislating is one thing, but enforcement of what laws we already have is far more pertinent in my view.
Yeah.
If we enforced the legislation that we already have, a lot of these issues would be sorted.
There's a bit of a balance, and I don't think we should be too prescriptive. We are a free country and there's much to be said about that. But there are countries that are fully democratic but have got very useful laws on their books. Spain, I thought, was fascinating. They've done a really successful metro project in Madrid, but they actually have some property ownership laws that date from the Franco era. Yeah. Which literally means
get out of the way. We're building the tracks.
Now they're in a very civilized way, and they look after people. But they're not inhibited by law the way we are.
All right, we're going to have to take a quick break. We'll come back with a review of the business and other stories of the year with my guests Conor Falkland, Bob Hoffman, and Susan Hayes Cullerton. Stay tuned.
Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save, with customised coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping?
It's just so beautiful. Oh yeah, no, it's the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
With the state of today's economy, it's more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made from the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back in your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality, made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
Susan, you wanted to talk about tariffs, the twists, the turns, and the results, you know, looking on however long we've had them. But as we close out the year, was the shock that we had at the start of the tariffs on the expectation, was the actuality of them maybe not so bad?
Okay, let me bring listeners right through the year. As we started off in 2025, there was threats coming from everywhere. The US was saying that they were going to tariff 25% on Canada. And of course, the election was coming up. Subsequently, Mark Carney would win that, as would happen a little bit later on. And there was similar 25% was going to be on Mexico. Then there was the threats on China, etc. Everything changed on the 2nd of April then, when we had what Trump called Liberation Day. And I'm sure you'll all remember the big cutout that he had and these big numbers. And it looked like an iPhone screen that was all blown up. And after that then, there was days of frenzied reactions to this, because there was all sorts of big percentages thrown up there. And then, of course, he rode back on an awful lot of it on the 8th of April and said, right, now we're going to talk. So subsequently, as we came through the year, then coming into June, then there was a deal done with the UK, and Keir Starmer and Trump seemed to be doing besties at that point. But there was a lot of uncertainty here and across the EU until July. So in July then, they settled at 15%. However, the EU had to contribute $750 billion in energy spend and $600 billion in economic contribution of some form or another. So by now, everything changed at that stage again then, Bobby, because then we stopped talking about uncertainty all the time. So if we go from the beginning of the year to there, we started off with effective tariffs of around about 1% between the EU and the US. And then it rose to 15%, of which, broadly speaking, it has remained. Now, if we move on through the year, we get into November, and Mamdani was then elected as the New York governor at this particular point. And now, of course, the cost of living crisis is really dialing up in the US. So now Trump starts rolling back. And so instead then, the tariffs were rolled back on particular foodstuffs at that time.
And isn't that one of the, I suppose, really, really strange things about the way Trump operates? He doesn't care about... If he said something and said this was the tariff 2 weeks ago and he comes up with a new tariff, he's not bothered by any sort of historics around what he said 3 months ago. So he works in the moment.
Oh, he does, yeah. If you want,
so, and then, you know, like anybody who works that way, do as time goes on and tariffs come, they go, the reset, you know, if you push enough pressure on him, he'll change it. Do we not become a little bit anesthetized towards that way of working?
And then introduce the four-letter term tackle. Trump always chickens out. And I thought people paid far too much attention to that, because people were saying, well, the stock market is completely discounted tariffs. And I'll get on to that if we have time. But the reality is, Bobby, we are finishing the year at a very different place than how we began. And so that does make a difference. But a few things that I can't understand about his thinking, and that is, first of all, if we look at the results, $250 billion has been collected in tariff revenue, and that's around about 167 of the tariffs that I've talked about. But now he's talking about paying out $2,000 checks to everybody who earns under 100 grand next year. So that'll cost a lot more than what he took in.
Yeah, and like, if you look at tariffs, and you know, companies were absolutely terrified about the impact it was going to have on their business, particularly some of the, like, there was all sorts of exclusions. The pharmaceutical sector, which accounts for, you know, a huge proportion of our exports.
And that was where we learned about the Section 232 review then, of which was going to be around national security. But then on, I think it was Friday the 5th of December, an announcement came out then that the UK and the US was going to have a 0% tariff on pharmaceutical products, for the very, very reason that you're saying, as long as the NHS was now agreeing to pay more for the medicines that they were going to import from the US. So now the second thing then was, all of this was designed to take money off foreigners. When you actually look at this, 4% of that revenue that there has been collected came from foreigners. The rest, around about 26%, was paid by the consumer in the form of higher inflation. The rest of it has been paid by the importer, which is exactly the way it works. So he's taken money off his own people, and particularly the importers, and then is going to give it all back out to everybody under 100 grand. And on top of that, it was supposed to promote domestic manufacturing, but there's 58,000 fewer jobs in manufacturing as a result.
And there's no doubt that costs, you know, and costs that people feel, sort of, such as supermarket purchases and that, yeah, but not to the extent that you would have expected.
Yes.
Now, I would have thought that prices would have, given the tariffs as they were set out, versus what the prices consumers are paying in the supermarket, that I think he's got away with, like, he's almost scot-free.
Well, if there's one thing that the guy really is good at, it's gaslighting and filling the air with BS. I mean, his policy from day one has been to turn on a literal fire hose of BS.
Yeah.
And never stop. So it wears people down. And he's now saying to the world that, you know, this was his plan all along. Anything that happens turns out to have been his plan all along. We all recall the Liberation Day graphic that he showed up, which people were scratching their heads because it was illiterate. I mean, it didn't mean what he thought it meant. If this was a high school project with a 15-year-old, you know, he would have failed his economics test, showing a basic lack of understanding of what he was waving in the air. But he's immunized us to that. The fire hose of BS continues. And I guess in surviving the clown, we just have to do our level best to, you know, as you would with an Oriental sultan back in the day, you bow and scrape when he's in sight, you wait for the moment when the idiot is out of the room, and then the adults try and manage the broken crockery and see what we can do afterwards. We're 1 year in. We've 3 years to go.
Yeah.
And then, please God, the stupid SOB.
Connor has hit the nail on the head. We have to go back to basics. Steve Bannon, the architect of the whole MAGA concept. You just flood the airwaves with batty ideas, three or four of them a day, and get the media running around and the general public panicking about invading Greenland. And meanwhile, the real project is the social engineering that's going on in the US on civil rights, abortion, this ICE campaign of terror. That's what the Republicans are really after. All the rest of it is just distraction. It really is.
No, but there is another element to go back to your point about why do we not have higher inflation. That is because there was massive bulk buying and stocking up of inventories before this.
What about the latest Central Statistics Office figures, Susan? Because did they not say that while there was a spike with the tariffs that everybody exported so much to get over it, that seems to have continued, that the exports are still powering on?
Well, yes. But first of all, if we look at the trade deficit, particularly in terms of looking at the impact of tariffs, it's very, very hard to call if actually the tariffs have been working in order to promote more US domestic spending. And that's the point, is when you look at, when you're saying about translating this into inflation, the thing is that there was so much of this being bought up at the beginning of the year, that's now filtering through. But I'll tell you where you will see it. When you look at the corporate profits, like there's 500 companies in the S&P 500. There's 7 million companies in America. And when you look at the corporate profits recorded in the middle quarter of the year, it was reduced from 64 billion down to 7 million. And so that's the point, is that that's where this has really been felt. So therefore, you've seen an increase in inventories. You've seen the importers taking this, and particularly it being hit in terms of their margin. And then you've also seen some as well hit in terms of inflation. But that's why it hasn't all just arisen in the figures.
Yeah,
it's coming, I think, Susan. Now, you might know more about this than I, but one of the things that Trump has on his mind is to get installed a more malleable chairman of the Federal Reserve in order that he can, I mean, essentially print money. And he wants that injected into the economy in time for next year's midterms. Now, if you're an economist, you say that is an absolutely stupid thing to do. But if you're Donald Trump, the politician, if you can create a bit of, artificial froth in quarter three of next year, that serves as political objective.
There is one thing, though, Conor, I do think it's important to mention about what has worked, because an awful lot of what I've said, I think, has just been, you know, self-fulfilling problems that he's caused for himself. But when you look at the amount of capital that is committed to the US, that has increased. Now, he says it's $21 trillion. Now, Bobby, that's 70% of US GDP. It couldn't even handle that much. The White House tracker says it's $9.6 trillion. I don't really agree with that either. But if it was down even, right, and I do believe it, that it could be as far as $1.5 trillion committed to the US, that would make a difference. And you know, he ruins it then by putting some number that doesn't exist at all, instead of highlighting this is more money than FDR's New Deal after the Second World War. And the second thing is it's actually more than the stimulus after 2007-2009. He sometimes misses the real stuff. Yeah. And with the froth.
Hard to feel sorry for the git, because
come off the fence there now, Connor.
His policy is to fill the air with garbage to obscure stuff he wants obscured, so that occasionally when he gets something right, nobody sees it and he doesn't get credit for that either. I will be needing a very small violin.
At a higher level, Connor, you know, if we look at Europe now and the relationship that Europe traditionally, well, Ireland even, our relationship that we had with the US, it's changed, has it not, because of all this? They're no longer a friend, I think you say.
Well, they're no longer a reliable partner, and that is absolutely scary. That is a paradigm shift on the entire planet. And look, we grew up until maybe 10 years ago, Trump won. We thought we lived in a fairly stable and secure world. We had a secure partner next door to us in the Brits. We might give out about them, but there they were. They went rogue, electing populist, incompetent governance, trashed their own legendary unwritten constitution. So where British citizens or subjects thought they had constitutional guarantees, it turns out they were just smoke in the wind.
Yeah.
Because the next populist along can just throw it in the bin. In Europe, for 80 years, we've been built around partnership with the United States. Defence partnership, economic partnership. We found that they elect a populist, and that's just gone in the wind. So what does Europe do about it? And, Trump, for all his faults, is not always wrong. Sometimes he's breaking things that need to be broken.
Yeah.
So Europe has been leaning on the Americans for decades, not paying for our own defence, relying on the Americans as being our partner in, world affairs, dealing with the Chinese or whatever it is. So our, little institution here of whatever we are at the moment, 450 million people, we are going to have to start behaving like adults. And that means we have to take greater responsibility for our own defence as Europe. And Ireland is a ridiculous free rider within Europe.
Yeah.
So we're all going to have to up our game there. And we are going to have to act more like a cohesive bloc. And we're going to have to learn the lesson that our forever friend, our great buddy, the leaders of the free world with whom we share the same values, the same outlook, the same, you know, individual rights and law and all that sort of stuff, at a stroke, they have become the bullies shaking us down for cash instead of our partners. Now, even if Trump is gone in a couple of years' time and normality is restored, you can't restore the security, the guarantee, because it's been demonstrated to us that you can't rely on it. Trump has blown it away.
Yeah. Bob, just finally to close this out, the American multinationals working in this country have provided us with a bonanza, both in terms of jobs, corporation tax, and we're all the time being reminded about how vulnerable that is for all sorts of reasons. But we trundle on, we keep taking it, and we keep saying, well, isn't this great? But do you ever fear, when you look at what's happening in the world today, that our overdependence on US trade could come back to ultimately bite us?
Well, I mean, Susan will know the figures better than any of us, but I believe that the last take was $10 billion up on the previous year on the corporation tax. So, yeah, we still are addicted, and maybe addicted's the wrong term. The American corporations come here because it makes good business sense for them to come here. We are the English-speaking foothold in the EU for them after our British friends decided to shoot themselves in the foot and move out. But a perfect example about our over-reliance on them is this drug Mounjaro, which is the active ingredient that's manufactured here in Ireland. And it was sent to the US in such quantities and at such value that it artificially shows us this is the fastest growing economy in the world. I mean, we are a great, strong economy, but we're certainly
Does that
not
bring
at
us
that
back
scale.
To leprechaun economics,
There's
Susan?
It's such an irony that Mounjaro is associated with the fastest growing. It is supposed to do the opposite and suppress one's appetite. So there's a real contrast there. Okay, corporation tax, $30 billion this year, and there was striking figures in November. The tax take, Bobby, in November, all of it now, not just corporation tax, in 1 month in November 2025 was the same as the tax take in 2015.
Amazing.
Like, it's striking. Mm-hmm. It is just extraordinary. But when we look at it, corporation tax now pays for all of our education spending and the hospital system, and three companies pay 38% of it. So, I listened to the interview that Pascal Donoghue did, you know, as another story of 2025, of course, that he left and has now gone to the World Bank. And his point was, if he didn't spend that money, particularly in light of a cost of living crisis, and certainly going back to our earlier conversation about infrastructure, many of us could argue that some more should have been spent there. When I see the comparison in the amount of tax take we've taken in, the expansion of public sector spending, not so much health now, well, we can get to that as well. But I do think that we can be critical of our reliance, if you want to call it, on corporation tax, but we are taking it in. It is important to spend it and to create those places in the education system. And of course, I'll go back to the point, we are an expanding population. 100,000 people a year for the past 4 years is what we've grown. So therefore, I think corporation tax, of course, is to be celebrated, but certainly to be taken great care of. And our foreign direct investment, the announcements this year have been up 37% so far. So I think let's celebrate it, certainly, but let's make sure we're holding on to it.
And let's go full circle back to our first story. We've just demonstrated the country has the money, going back to infrastructure and housing, and we've got the land. We've one of the lowest population densities in Europe.
How are we spending the money, as we said?
Exactly.
Okay, we'll have to take another break. My guests are Susan Hayes-Cullerton, Bob Hoffman and Conor Faulkner. We're reviewing the big stories of the year. Stay with us. We'll be back after these.
With the state of today's economy, it is more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made of the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back into your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
Susan, I'd like to, I suppose, end this piece on some level of positivity. And I suppose if we're looking for positives, one place to look that has been really positive is the stock market.
Well, it has actually, and surprisingly, it hasn't got the headlines, but Europe has done very well this year. And when you look at the top 20 index performances of the year, every second one was in Europe, and indeed our good selves were among them. Few stories that happened this year. One was, of course, and I'm surprised we haven't talked about it yet, is AI. One of the key things we looked at was the Mag 7, and there was a lot of headlines driven towards it, Bobby. And I think, and look, I was part of that as well, but I do think there was points there that were covered up by that. For example, permanent TSB in Ireland more than doubled this year. When we look further afield,
should we not be worried about the banks being the biggest share gainers of the year? Two banks, PTSB and I think it was Bank of Ireland.
You mean from the perspective of an overvaluation?
Yeah.
Or you mean from where it's coming?
Well, firstly, you know, the last time we crashed, the bank valuations were going through the roof. When I saw those being the two biggest stock gains of the year, which I think they might have been, certainly in percentage terms, I just thought back to the sort of dark mornings of Tuesday in February of 2009.
And, well, what I will say about that is as we come to the end of 2025, a lot of people are now questioning, and perhaps this leads back to your point, is are we seeing stretched valuations? The IMF have been talking about this, the Bank of England have been talking about this, and also the ECB has been talking about this. So, not necessarily in the Irish banks that we're talking about it now, but in the stock market in general. And I just think that there's a few interesting things going on here. First of all, when we look at Alphabet this year, I thought by now, Bobby, we'd be talking about Nvidia as the big star. But it's actually Alphabet is the one to watch, because it in round about October, November of this year, its Gemini 3 came out and has been said to have leapfrogged ChatGPT 5. When we look at OpenAI, that was going to be deemed as potentially the world's first $1 trillion IPO or initial public offering to come to the market. The question now is, can it actually keep up ahead of its lead? So I think one of the stories that will be, as we look back, is certainly, are we in an AI bubble?
And just to sort of push that out a bit further, the concentration of so much wealth with so few here, particularly when we look at AI, you're going to talk about one serious winner, but there's got to be a whole lot of losers.
But I thought about that right throughout the year. One could easily question, was Nvidia the only one of the Mag 7 actually making money out of AI? And one could have said that. But Alphabet is now really picking up on that. But when we also look at the Mag 7, like Amazon is only up single digit figures. Whereas going back to, let's say, the Irish story there, we see something like permanent TSB doubling. But yet that didn't. Now, I know, again, that's a small stock in the context of the world. Rheinmetall, we talked earlier on about, you know, well, Conor particularly mentioned the increase in defence spending that Europe needs to happen. Rheinmetall was another stock, and that was up 150% this year in Europe. So I think there's been a lot of the focus has been on the Mag 7 are now a third of the S&P 500. However, I think there's various other stories in there. And the other one, we mentioned Mounjaro earlier on today. And like the story the year before, of course, was Ozempic. And interestingly, Novo Nordisk has really had, unfortunately, a really significant contraction. And that was particularly driven. It was more so towards the end of the year. They came out with Alzheimer's drug trials that hadn't gone very well. Whereas instead, Eli Lilly, particularly with their pill-based GLP-1 drugs, they are the ones that have really taken off this year. So there's a lot going on. Then, of course, towards the latter end of the year, we saw a decrease in the cryptocurrency markets. There was a big focus as well on high-yield bond funds this year with the decrease in interest rates. There was a lot that happened this year in the market, for sure.
Could I say, Susan, that it's not just the publicly listed stock? Because if you look at some of the private trades, the venture capital stuff, so there you see some companies being sold for what, to my mind, are absolutely crazy multiples. I mean, some of the valuations out there, I've never seen anything like it. I cannot.
If you look at insurance businesses, vets, dentists,
you're looking at
like there's VC money in all those sectors now that was never there before.
And they're going, Bobby, for like EBIT multiples of like 20, 21 times, 22 times. It's just.
But there's also, on a positive side to that, Connor, a lot of those businesses that if you're a vet and you don't have any succession or no one's going to buy your business because you're not there, it is a way of getting out. It is a way of of liquidating your work.
And also, I think it's important that we go back to the budget this year, which means that for any business that is selling, they now have 1.5 million of it, the entrepreneur tax relief credit, an increase of €500,000. And I think, like, sometimes when we talk about things like that, it sounds like, sure, who is that for? Is that just for millionaires? There's an awful lot of businesses in the country, Bobby, that started off, you know, 10, 20, 30 years ago. And you're right, they don't have a succession plan. They haven't thought about it. But if they do go about it, there could be a very high tax bill. So there was a very positive development this year in the budget with an increase of €500,000.
I totally accept that.
Every business should be thinking about that.
Bob?
Here's my view on it. We got to sort of keep to basics here. All these stories are effectively about a success story, which is Ireland Inc. We're all old enough to remember the 1980s when everybody was flooding out of the country, and as a country we're rummaging down the back of the couch looking for spare change. This is now all about managing an overheating economy, which is ultimately a good story. I mean, if people are flooding into the country, I know it brings challenges. Cost of living is a challenge, but you got to remember we are a high cost economy, but we're also a high salaried economy. So we are the proud owners of a very strong economy. We have very high productivity rates versus some of our competitors around the world. So you got to remember, guys, this is about positive growing pains. And every now and then, you just need to be reminded. And I think Stripe sums it up. Two schoolboys who went and wrote 20 lines of code and have turned it into a 10,000 person business called Stripe around the world with a market capitalization of 106 billion and personal wealth of 10 billion between the two of them, and have now reopened their headquarters here.
And the question is, are they from Limerick or Tipperary?
That is the ultimate question of the day. That argument will rumble.
I told you this wasn't a D4 conversation.
Thanks, Bobby, for reminding me accordingly.
Great to see an Irish unicorn, though, isn't it?
Fantastic.
We should see more of them. And actually, that's very well said, Bob, because, I mean, it is a thriving country, and the leprechaun economics thing annoys me. That was essentially an insult thrown at us by Paul Krugman, I think, the Nobel economist. He hasn't had a good thing to say about Ireland in 30 years. 30 years of prosperity here, he hasn't known.
He doesn't like it.
Always something wrong as far as he's concerned. But we've lived and breathed the prosperity in this country, and, you know, we do remember the 80s. My goodness, the problems we have now, we would have given our left arm for a set of problems like that.
And we also have to remember, we are highly regarded around the world as a nation, as a people, as a culture, whether your views on Israel and the Eurovision Song Contest, but small country like Ireland and standing up for the downtrodden. We are an admired nation, and I think sometimes we've got to stop beating ourselves up.
What about the way, and you talk about different times, Connor, back to the 80s, but even if you look at the way we work now, it's changed so much. And so many things, you know, have changed around that. If we talk about the valuations of commercial property, people wanting smaller offices, maybe not wanting any office at all, and the economic effect that has on people coming into the city, on traders then that feed off that, all these things, like one change in our lifestyle can have a big impact, both positively and negatively, on big swathes of society.
Yeah, and I guess working from home is the classic example of that. I mean, it was always probably coming gradually because the technology was there. Then COVID meant it arrived overnight. And employers are now, as we talked about it, we've talked about it before on the show, Bobby, employers, there's a tension now between employee and employers about how much time you want to spend in the office. But it's fascinating to see what it's doing to towns and cities, because initially I think it felt like they were being hollowed out. And a Dublin city centre especially, I just thought, you know, it's dying around here. But that actually seems to be changing now. I think we're finding new uses for the city centre space, and I think it's picking up, it's becoming a bit more lively again. And you never know, this might actually work out beautifully for us.
I think it was always going to take time, and we all know the oversimplistic solution is to get people living, given that there's a shortage of places where people can live, getting them living in the places that we used to need for retail. Now, that's really overly simplistic, but that will happen over a period of years, because eventually commerce will prevail.
And I think local authorities, the length and breadth of the country, are having to free up access to that. At the moment, if you want to convert the space above the shop into an apartment, the requirements, the planning requirements on you are so onerous that you just physically can't do it. You know, you have to put in £500,000 worth of fire escape in order to put a bed sit above the shop. There's, you just can't do it.
Yeah.
So, but I think local authorities recognising the need and in the, you know, climate we've been discussing about getting obstacles out of people's way, I think that might free up, and it could be liberating when it does, I hope.
On the working from home thing, of course, you can't work from home without good telecoms infrastructure. And actually, one of the rare infrastructure success stories we've had in recent years, and as an ex-telecoms man, I know a lot of the people involved, was National Broadband Ireland. And for fear of stating the obvious, it was handed to a private company to roll out. So that brought high speed. I have faster broadband in Wicklow Town on the edge of the town than I do in my office in Harcourt Street. So it really helped rural Ireland work from home.
What does it tell you about the press? You wouldn't even find that story. You have to go looking for it. Google the Children's Hospital and you'll get like oceans of print about what a disaster everything is. So again, fair point. There are some things that we do well in this country. We just don't talk about them.
I think when we also need to look at what 2025 has brought in terms of technology, I think, you know, we sat here a few years ago and we spoke about, oh, now we've ChatGPT, and fundamentally that was called generative AI. It's agentic AI now is the big one. That's what people are looking at, where we now see bots on websites where we talk to them and they're available at any stage. There was a recent digital report out, actually, was PwC had it. It was all around the hopes and dreams of people when it comes to the labour market. And it was done right across the world globally. But in Ireland, only 3% of people had seen how agentic AI could be a boost to their productivity. And that was 6% globally. I think that's certainly a one to watch.
And why is that so low?
Oh, I think because we don't trust robots to engage with our customers. And by the way, I'm on the other side of that 3%. I don't trust it yet at all to engage with our customers. So if anybody is engaging with us, they're dealing with a real person. But it's not so much that, Bobby. I think it is the point that generative AI has now well embedded itself into our companies, the way in which we work, our preparation, etc. But it's agentic AI is the one that I'm watching next year. Going back to the stock market, it's one of the areas that is driving Salesforce on. And I was interested as well, it happened around about the beginning of December. One of Meta's biggest days in the stock market was when it announced a 30% cut in the budget around the metaverse. So I think there's a lot of technology trends to look at. And obviously, just as Bob said, driven by the infrastructure, and similarly, as Connor said, around people working from home as well. But there's a lot to watch here. And I think AI literacy is going to have to become a bigger part of our education system in the years to come too.
Yeah. Bob, AI literacy, in terms of the effect of AI in your own business, you know, I think we've, as people, as humans, we've suffered all sorts of shocks through the Industrial Revolution, but we've always come up with something that works for society in terms of work versus reward versus living our lives. Would you be optimistic that, you know, the same will prevail, that this will sort itself out, though it will be different?
I remember the legendary sales director at ESAT Digifund, Jerry McQuaid, called me into his office and said, Bob, we want to get data from 1% up to 4% on the mobile phone network. I mean, now it's about 90%. So look, mobile phones came in and turned our planet upside down. There's been so many technology waves. I must admit, AI is probably the one that's a little bit spooky. We all remember Skynet and the Terminator movie, self-aware. But no, the $1.75 trillion that the American Magnificent Seven have spent on AI, 50% of it is lost money, but the other 50% will change the world. So AI is around to stay, it's just which bits of it. I'm a big fan of ChatGPT myself, a lot of the rest of it I ignore, but yeah, we're going to have to get used to it.
But I also think as well, we have a great opportunity in Europe to put the guardrails around it to make sure that it's done right, and the EU AI Act could really be a model for the rest of the world to follow, and this is a place we could definitely distinguish ourselves. A lot of people have been talking this year and last year about the Draghi report, questioning where is Europe's place in the world, and I think this could be one of them, Bob.
Yeah, and of course we have the EU data commissioner based here in Dublin, so any of the big Magnificent Seven who need a slap on the wrist or pointed in the right direction, it'll come through the Dublin office.
Perhaps both on the same day.
Well, well, you heard it here, folks. Positivity just oozing from our panel here of Susan Hayes-Cullerton, Bob Hoffman and Conor Fallon. Thank you all, one and all, for a great review of the business and some other stories over the year. I've really enjoyed the conversation, and hopefully our listeners enjoyed it too.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11 on News Talk.